I do not believe that there will be a significant shortage or any really measurable shortage. Again, these stores have had almost a year to get ready for this.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode, we speak with New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos. Let's get right to it. During a visit to Plattsburgh, Sagos sat down with WAMC North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley to talk about the state's coming plastic bag ban and several other environmental issues.
One of the things that you came up to talk to the media about today is the plastic bag ban that starts on March 1st, the single-use plastic bans. Do you think that people are aware that the ban is coming? And what are the key things that people really need to know about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think, Pat, I do think that most New Yorkers are aware the ban is coming. You know, we did this last year with the legislature during the legislative session, which ended in June. We've been talking about it regularly. My teams around the state have been talking with the public about it regularly. The retailers have begun talking about it as well. You see some of the big chains like Wegmans and Price Chopper and some of those downstate chains as well have been getting the word out. You know, the public in some ways has been moving in this direction for a while. Many chains providing these retail these multiple use bags at the checkout. So we're now in the last stages of it. 30 days from now, we're talking about no more plastic bags being used in New York. It's going to be a great thing for the environment, for our landscape. And, you know, we have a robust sort of last lap communication campaign to make sure people understand what's happening. Any kind of questions that they have about what is or what isn't a reusable bag, we'll be getting that out there. And then rolling out bags that we've purchased and giving those away to some communities where you see folks who lower and middle income folks who you know have been asking for reusable bags. So we'll be doing that over the next 30 days.
Do you think there's in some ways an awareness about this or people aren't too worried about this because we have seen a transition ongoing even before this bill came up? We've got chains like Aldi's where you go in and you have to bring your own bag or buy their own bag as it is. You know, you have at least up here, if you go into Canada, it's the same sort of thing. They have a single-use ban already. Mm-hmm. Surrounding states have banned or are banning them. So do you think that's one reason why people are in some cases prepared already?
I think so. I think that's exactly right. You see the change happening already, whether it's right around us, whether it's in some counties here in New York where they've already done this, like down in Long Island. This has also been happening, as you note, worldwide. There's been a movement towards reusable bags for a while now. And in fact, when we were looking at our plastic bag task force, we caucused all of the other geographic locations where this type of ban had been put into place to see how these things roll out over time. Usually there's this period of awareness. It fades, as with anything. Then when the law is about to take effect, there's a spike in awareness again. And you just you need to lean forward and make sure everyone understands what the law is and then help them across the finish line if they need any kind of help, such as providing bags themselves.
Well, even though many people are aware the bag ban is going into effect, there's still some questions, in some cases some confusion. Mm-hmm. So some of the questions that I've seen are along the lines of, does the bag ban mean that people who have the single-use bags collected at home can't use them anymore?
No. So that's a good point. If you have a plastic bag and you want to bring it back and reuse it, you can do that. I mean, the reason that we're banning those kinds of bags is, frankly, you can only do that so many times before the bag just falls apart and becomes waste. So as with any law, there will be a period of transition, right? The law goes into effect and then we recognize we don't lead with enforcement on day one. We lead with education on day one. So there are those people who want to, you know, use their reusable or their single-use bags over time. Fine, they can do that. If there are stores, however, that are continuing to sell or otherwise promote the use of single-use bags, that's when we have to do more more thorough education, because that's really not allowed.
You mentioned stores and the use of single-use bags. Some people are concerned that if you can't use single-use bags, what's going to happen when they have, like, meats or produce items that they want to put in a bag separately? They're used to having a single-use bag separately wrapped.
Right.
Does the ban apply to those types?
Great question. The answer is no. So we there are exemptions in the law to cover such things as meats and produce, even to cover such things as goldfish bags, for example. You know, we heard from pet dealers that you can't put a bunch of goldfish in a plastic in a paper bag. So yes, that would be part of the exemptions that we give. Art stores that sell huge pieces of paper or canvas, you can still carry out a large item like that with your plastic bag to prevent the rain from destroying it. So there was a need to present some clarity as to what was not included in the ban, and ultimately get everyone across the finish line without any of those kinds of problems. We don't want goldfish flopping around in people's cars.
Unless you have a puddle of some
Unless
kind,
they want that. Yeah. I mean, it's up to them.
Some people will want to be able to access paper bags if they're not bringing their own canvas bags into stores. But I've read some reports that are claiming that there could be a paper bag shortage because the manufacturers supposedly won't be able to keep up with demand. Have you heard that? Is that accurate?
We've certainly heard it. I've asked my staff to look into that. The same claims have been made elsewhere when these transitions go into place. So we will be exploring that more closely. I do not believe that there will be a significant shortage or any really measurable shortage. Again, these stores have had almost a year to get ready for this. The manufacturers themselves of paper bags have a financial interest in making sure that they're actually producing these things to be available for consumers, right? Because there will be in some cases, a fee charged them, or the stores will just buy the bags for use. So, I don't see that being an issue. And again, we're not driving people towards paper. We're driving people hopefully towards reusable bags, and there's no shortage of those as far as I can tell.
Well, paper will be a factor, and I remember when Vermont was considering a single-use ban, there was an argument that said using paper bags would be more expensive and less beneficial to the environment. And since you're commissioner of the DEC, maybe you can give a perspective on this. Their argument was that the manufacturing and transport cost of paper bags was more damaging to the environment than simply using single-use plastic bags. As commissioner, what's your response to an argument like that?
Yeah, I don't buy that. Not for a moment. I mean, for example, if you take a bag that's been used once, you can recycle it quite easily in a paper stream. You can't do that really easily with a plastic bag, which gets into these recycling facilities and gets all shredded into parts and gums up the facilities. It's very difficult to recycle plastic bags unless it's a perfectly clean bag. I've certainly seen and heard those arguments. From my view, if you have paper as a use as opposed to a fossil fueled bag as a use, that is a benefit to the overall environment. Keep in mind, one of the reasons we're doing this is because we use 23 billion plastic bags every year. Those things land up in landfills and they're there for generations, or they're in your landscape. They're in streets, trees all over the our urban areas. They're breaking apart. They're getting into the food chain. They don't go away forever. In my view, that's something that's totally unacceptable. And I think people agree that they'd rather use paper, even taking into account some of the storage concerns from the stores, which are legitimate, right? Some of these bags are just bulkier. I think most people would take that any day over something that just lasts in the landscape for forever.
We've got the single-use plastic bag ban going into effect on March 1st. And in his budget address, Governor Cuomo is calling now for a ban on polystyrene. How much of an impact would that have on the environment? Would it be the same, bigger than a single-use plastic bag ban?
Mm. Well, 60% of New Yorkers are already covered by polystyrene bans right now, which is encouraging. So we're almost only talking about moving the remaining 40% in some ways. But this is a ban on the use of single-use polystyrene in food operations. So plates, storage boxes, the kinds of things where you bring polystyrene. You bring home the doggy bag. It's a polystyrene bag, and then you toss it away. Much like the plastic bags, these things, when they get in the environment or in landfills, they literally last forever. There's also a health concern with polystyrene. The styrene itself and other additives within these products, like benzene, for example, have been shown to leach into food, and those are actually known carcinogens. We would want to move people very easily into alternatives. There are lots of alternative types of plates and configurations that don't present both the single-use problem of clogging up landfills, but also the health issues. And then in addition to the single-use food utensils, would be a ban on the use here in New York State of packing peanuts, which is made of the same material. You know, you open up a box from somewhere, USA, and it comes with all the packing peanuts, and the wind picks up and it blows all over the landscape. So it's a mess, and it also has that issue, if you throw it in the trash, of clogging landfills.
Not only that, the static electricity on them, you can't get rid of them.
They stick to your clothes. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all over the place. A little bit on some other topics. Mm-hmm. Catskill Park advocates want to see a doubling of the $10 million that's currently allocated in the budget for stewardship funding for the Catskill and Adirondack parks. They say the large increase in the number of visitors in both parks requires that doubling for improvements, maintenance, and parking lots, things like that. Will the DEC press to increase the funding line? And if so, by how much?
So you couldn't have a more committed governor to the Catskills and the Adirondacks than Governor Cuomo. We have not just those stewardship lines. And what I've told the advocates in the past is I totally agree with them. We need to put more funding into those areas. But I draw the public's attention to the funding sources beyond just the Environmental Protection Fund, which is a critical tool for us. But we have funding in an unprecedented way now that is available for these great parks. The New York Works, which is a source of capital funding at DEC, the Clean Water Infrastructure Act, which is largely a grant program going out to municipalities, Superfund, which doesn't play as much into Catskills and Adirondacks, but it's nonetheless a grant program. And now the governor's proposed this $3 billion Environmental Bond Act. Even 3 years ago, before we had some of these boosts, we were spending upwards of $18, $19 million a year just in the Catskills alone on those exact kinds of projects. So I am very confident that with this budget and the unprecedented amount of money that the governor's proposing that DEC has at its disposal, we'll be spending more to upgrade our facilities in the Adirondacks and Catskills. And in terms of the Catskills, bringing great attention to these beautiful places that are, 90 minutes from New York City, unbelievably.
Well, speaking about bringing more attention to the beautiful places in New York State, we've brought so much attention to the Adirondacks and the High Peaks area that obviously the total number of visitors kind of went off the charts, and therefore so did the problems surrounding that. And the Adirondack Council said that the data that they collected said that the state's initial actions are beginning to help somewhat. Mm-hmm. But there's still, concerns about the high level of peak use and such. You're working on the parking. You're working on trying to reroute hiking. Mm-hmm. Is the DEC going to be even more aggressive in restricting parking and educating hikers and getting them to, off the High Peaks area and into other sites? Mm,
absolutely. We really have a full comprehensive campaign underway right now. This is, again, I've said this in the past publicly, this is a good problem to have. When you have this many people that want to come to the Adirondacks and want to go into these hamlets, want to head into our back countries. That's exactly what you want when you're managing a state. You know, the governor's put so much money into tourism promotion. Now we see the results of that. And if you ask a municipality, you ask someone, you know, who's running a business in this area, they love this. But you've noted the unintended consequences of this, right? The parking issues, the safety issues, you know, the hikers that go back unprepared into the wilderness. And these are the things that we now are grappling with. We've got a head start. Council notes that there's been some progress according to their data. We agree. Our data shows the same thing. We're seeing some progress on usage and spreading out the usage to different places. So it's really, you know, this advisory team that we put together is helping to identify all of the potential solutions to this. The budget this year the governor put forward gives us a head start on some of the biggest issues, one being parking. As you've probably seen on Route 73 and other places, cars parked along the roads. It's dangerous for the people that are parking there. It's unsustainable for the supervisors and the county officials who have to deal with that overuse parking issue. So money in the budget to work on a shuttle system, right? Centralized parking area, get the shuttles out there on a regular basis on high usage weekends so that people can get dropped off and picked up again from trailheads. That's one big initiative. Two, rebuilding these trails. Some of these trails they were never designed right in the first place, a sort of vertical trail straight up that side of the mountain. We have to rebuild some of these trails and not have to rebuild them in 2 years. Put in place a little bit more shoe leather, a little bit more sweat and blood, and have them built for 100 years. And that then protects the habitat and protects the wild spaces. And then, you know, by getting people into these centralized areas, we can send our officials back into the backcountry to help do more effective rescues, better education, the forest ranger force out there, getting them away from having to do parking tickets. I don't want to lead with enforcement. You want to lead with alternatives. You want to make everyone's experience a positive one because then they want to come back, right? No one wants to come here and get, you know, get into a traffic jam. We want to make sure they come here. They love this beautiful protected landscape. They go spend money in the hamlets. And they say, well, you know what? New York is better than any other place in the world, and I want to come back to it. And I couldn't agree with them if they say that.
Well, that's one of the more obvious problems and benefits of the Adirondacks, you know, the fact that it's there, it's so beautiful, people are coming, but we've got the problems. One of the more subtle challenges that the Adirondacks faces is a winter problem, and that's the use of salt on the roads. Mm-hmm. You know, the winter maintenance. And some Adirondack communities, I'm thinking North Elba and Lake Placid in particular, have been doing some tests to diminish salt use. What's the DEC doing to deal with salt use on roads, not only in the Adirondacks, but across the state,
right?
Because it is an environmental problem.
Right. No question about it. It's this this fight between safety in a way, right? The salt, no one can argue that salt saves lives on roads, allows people to drive in the winter, keeps the economy moving along. In the same token, it runs off, if uncontrolled, into our watersheds. So we have to find that balance. We have to find that appropriate balance between salt application and ultimately protecting landscapes and human health. We've been at this now for a few years, really 3 years, with the Department of Transportation in strong partnership with them, and even some of the Adirondack environmental groups, to pilot a different strategy forward. It's been working to a degree on Lake George. There's been some positive movement there. And now deeper into the park, as you note, around Lake Placid, using lower levels of salt, finding different means of application. The DOT has been investing significantly in its fleets so that they're applying less salt. And it's also, you know, good bottom line initiative on their part to just not have to buy so much salt and apply it to the landscape. It's something we're taking seriously. You know, we got to do it with a number of different agencies at the table and certainly the scientific and environmental community out there providing us some analysis as to the threats. But ultimately, this is a statewide issue. It's a, you know, anywhere that gets cold is dealing with this very same problem. I think we're ahead of the game a little bit because of some of the science that both we are doing and some of the experts are doing here in New York State. And ultimately, achieving that balance in something that will, you know, that we can be proud of for a long time to come is something that I'm angling towards.
Another topic that I think is probably more focused further south of the Adirondacks. In Governor Cuomo's budget, he proposed permanently banning fracking, mm-hmm. Which has been prohibited since 2015. So I think a lot of people may think it's already permanently banned. You've supported it, but there's been, I think, a lingering question about importing fracking waste. Mm-hmm. So how do those two work together, a permanent ban and the import of fracking waste?
Sure. So absolutely right. We've had a de facto ban in effect since 2015. And it was a statement of the Department of Environmental Conservation and Department of Health's analysis that it could not be done safely in New York. We looked at that exhaustively, and hindsight proves us right. You see this in other states, the way their landscape has been managed, their water resources, the spills, you know, on and on. This administration was absolutely right to protect New York for generations to come, and I was proud to be a part of that. I want to make sure that the public understands this issue of fracking waste coming into New York. It's very clear. The only waste that is coming into New York's landfills are from the drilling of wells, not the production of any kind of frack gas. And it's an important distinction, because when you're drilling a well, all you are producing is rock and dirt. And that rock and dirt goes to from some Pennsylvania operations, goes to a couple of landfills in the southern tier of New York. And that is literally it. There is no waste from the actual fracking process, which is much different. You drill the well. After you drill a well, you have to put in place chemicals and water to create those explosions in the underground to frack the earth and have production of gas. That generates waste. That process generates waste, and it is a polluting process. That's why we banned it in New York, because the generation of that waste would have been bad for New York's water quality resources. That is not coming into New York, though. So the only thing that's coming into New York, and it is coming in at a vastly diminishing rate, which is very important, because, in fact, there's a glut of gas right now nationally. There's too much of it being produced. The production companies are really actually stalling, in some cases going bankrupt. So the production of this dirt into New York landfills is actually gone way down over the last few years. So I don't view that as any way inconsistent with the ban and fracking here in New York.
Commissioner, you know, since some people are concerned about fracking waste, is there, you know, is the DEC monitoring, or mm-hmm. is there any concern that the companies that are bringing the rock and material waste from the initial drilling, that they're somehow bypassing, you know, other laws and getting the other residual waste from the actual fracking somehow in with this other waste and getting it into New York?
Well, we have to enforce our law, right? And we do a good job inspecting shipments that come into New York, no matter what it is, for that matter. Any kind of waste going to a landfill, it's highly regulated. The landfill operators are held to a very strict standard. If there are violations, we come down hard on them. And this is just the policy we have at landfills. One of the things that we put into place, but I think it was back in 2014, at these landfills, was a requirement to test for naturally occurring radiation. And that is something, you drill any kind of well, you pull up any kind of rock, it has, you know, naturally occurring radiation in it. So there are radiation detectors at the landfills as well. And if there are any blips, the shipment gets rejected and sent back. Our system is designed to find the problems, to keep the haulers accountable, and to hold the landfills to a high standard.
Back into the Adirondacks, the Adirondack Remsen Lake Placid Rail Trail is finally moving forward. Is this a relief for your agency?
I've been doing this issue since I was in the governor's office in 2013. Yes, it is a big relief. But it's not just a relief for my agency. I'm really excited for the people of the Adirondacks. I mean, it is, and for New Yorkers, for that matter, you have what is an amazing path forward here, a rail trail from Lake Placid to Tupper Lake, 34 miles, and then an upgraded section of rails from Tupper Lake all the way down to Utica. And Tupper Lake is a huge winner in this. I mean, they're gonna have the best of both worlds. And now you take all those bikers who are on really fairly narrow roads in Lake Placid area, you give them an alternative, a way to get through Saranac in a beautiful way, and a way to get to Tupper. It's exciting that this is going forward. I think it's going to be a big economic boon for the area. Anytime you see these kinds of trails put in place, you see huge usage. And we're excited to be a part of this. It's a great vision.
Rail construction, as I understand, the trail rail construction is supposed to start in 2021 and be done by like 2023. But I know some of these areas go through some wetland and boggy type areas. Mm-hmm. How challenging is it going to be?
Well, there are some smart people who are doing the engineering on this. You know, thankfully, rail construction has been commonplace for a century or more. You know, this is a well understood process generally. First of all, on the rail removal side, on the trail component, assuming everything gets through this year with Adirondack Park Agency process and everything else, that would begin this summer. So, in fact, some of those rails would begin removal this year. And the trail work would begin this year. Those rails that are reusable, we would then be putting down into the section of the tracks that would be used for train. So all of that work would be done in a coordinated way. We're bringing all the materials, in effect, to the west and rebuilding that line. Yes, there are some washouts we'll have to deal with. There are some sections where it's more boggy. But our DOT team is fantastic. They know what they're doing on this kind of stuff, and we've got some great consultants lined up too.
And before you leave, I want to check in real quick on the proposed Restore Mother Nature Bond Act. If the legislature agrees with that, what do you imagine New York voters will be voting on?
Yeah, great question. This is an exciting thing to be a part of. To have the governor propose something so ambitious like this, $3 billion for the environment. Already I'm hearing really positive feedback around the state on this. We'll have to agree on the language with the legislature over the next few weeks of the budget negotiations. But you're right. Once we get out of that, we have to pivot very quickly into a public relations campaign, right, to explain to New Yorkers why it's worth taking on more debt. And from my perspective, there are so many ways to be able to communicate this, but the governor is absolutely right about this. We have to think bottom up, right? Bottom up thinking has been working very well for this administration, whether it's the REDC process or the Ready Commission on Lake Ontario or any number of initiatives where we get the best ideas locally. What are the problems around the state that people want to solve in their own neighborhoods? We certainly can identify lots of problems where you see repeat flooding and climate change induced impacts during storms, sea level rise issues. But ultimately, we want the people of New York to be a part of this. And the governor's absolutely right. Bringing it to them, having a really smart campaign about that, and ultimately having them decide if they agree with us in November.
Commissioner Segas, thank you.
Great to see you, Pat.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. If you've been enjoying the WAMC News Podcast, remember the lockbox is open. You can help support WAMC Northeast Public Radio ahead of our February fund drive. You can make your pledge at WAMC.org. Thank you for that, and thanks for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.